Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 124. I'm recording it on Sunday, April 19th, 2009. The Pete 10 level today is 15. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at the Incompetech.com website. The title of this particular selection is Awkward Meeting. The title of the podcast is Taboo. This is going to be a interesting podcast, I believe. The last one I found very interesting. Number 123 was one of my favorites. The time value of money in stocks, because it all just sort of came to me. And it's one of those ones, you know, it came to me that, hey, you don't even have to look at valuation-informed indexing. You can just look at passive investing, the passive model, and show that even for passives, even for those who stick with the same stock allocation at all times, the stock crash was a good thing. And you can show that with numbers. You can show that with the historical data. And that's what I did in that podcast using a calculator. And people, you know, it blows people's minds. Nobody thinks of the stock crash as a good thing. And in that case, I'm not even arguing with the big name experts. The big name experts say we should be putting money in stocks now, that the drop in prices is a good thing. So they're saying the same thing. The only difference is I calculated it. I calculated the numbers. They just say vaguely, oh, you know, don't be afraid of stocks. It's a good thing that prices are lower. You're going to get better returns now. If you thought stocks were good before, they're even better, you know. But they don't calculate the numbers. See, that's the taboo. And so yesterday morning, I'm just toying around with ideas, and I said, wait a minute. This would be, here's an idea. And so thinking back on that one, last night I was thinking, well, why didn't I, now that I said it, now that I checked it on the calculator, it's so obvious. What took me 7 years to come up with that one? That's pathetic, Rob. And so it hit me. I said, this is, yeah, what, why would it be that I wouldn't even think of that myself? I have all the motive in the world. You know, this is what comes up when I'm talking about why do the passive investors not make a switch to rational? Rational is so much better in every possible way, you know, allows you to retire years sooner. What possible reason would there be for hanging on to this discredited model? Well, why did I hang on to my tired thinking that, the crash was a bad thing, at least for passives? Maybe it wasn't a bad thing for rationals, but it was a bad thing for passives. And then it hit me yesterday. No, that can't be right. It's got to be a good thing even for passives. And then I checked, and of course the numbers said just what your common sense tells you must be so. Why did I hang on? It's taboo. Thinking plainly, clearly, rationally about stock investing is taboo in our culture, in our society. This is, I think it's one of the reasons why I've always tended to, in all my thinkings about stock investing, I've always tended to bring in this word community. Because a taboo is a community thing. There is no individual who can make a taboo. No one. No one. You could be the president of the United States, and you can't say, I issue a declaration today, and it will henceforth be taboo, you know, to talk about whatever it is you don't want people to talk about. You know, can't talk about space exploration, or you can't talk about, you know, whatever it happens to be. A president can't do that. A president doesn't have that much power. A senator doesn't have that much power. Nobody does. Taboos are community events. And Only Rob Bennett could have ever been so dumb to take on two taboos at one time, totally not knowing what he was doing. I knew that what I was doing was controversial. I had no idea I was taking on something with the force of a taboo, and I didn't take on one, I took on two. The two taboos are, one, it is taboo to point out the flaws in the passive investing model of stock investing. It is taboo. And it is taboo to point out how abusive posting practices are used to, quote, maintain order on the internet. That is taboo. And I wrapped the two of them in a package, and, you know, threw a neutron bomb into the marketplace, not meaning to. Oh boy. So I'm going to talk a little bit about taboo. I looked it up on Wikipedia just to have some sort of definition. A strong social prohibition against discussion considered offensive to a group or community leads to severe penalties, embarrassment, and shame. Considered a sign of rudeness. To break a taboo is a sign of rudeness. Now, see, this is all that's going on. I think part of what brought on this recognition on my part that what we're dealing with is taboo, is a taboo, is that I had a thread this week. It's the second thread I've had at a board called, a board called Money Bloggers Network. And this is a place where people who write personal finance blogs get together and discuss strategies. And one of the things I'm doing nowadays is all the retire early and indexing boards have been destroyed or have imposed a ban on honest posting on safe withdrawal rates and other valuation-related questions. So I've decided to branch out, and I'm writing about these ideas. I've written a number of guest blogs, and then I go to the owner of a blog, and I say, hey, you want to run my guest blog? And, you know, a significant percentage says yes. And then that way, at least some people get to hear about the ideas. And so a few months ago, I thought, well, since I'm going to be, you know, writing these guest blogs, I ought to get to know some of the people that do these blogs. And I started just every now and then checking out this Money Bloggers forum. And then I thought, well, a good way to solicit would just be to write about the ideas here, and then people will know what the ideas are, and if they want a guest blog, they can just ask me. So I did a thread. It was called Problems with the Conventional Investing Advice. And it was very encouraging in one way and very discouraging in another. It was very encouraging because it was, this of course is post-crash, and I was answering people. I got a lot of response. That was of course encouraging. And I was answering people's questions with pretty much total honesty. You know, I've always held back throughout the first 7 years of the discussions because I want to tell the truth about investing, but I don't want people, you know, freaking out. So what I try to do is to tell the truth, to be honest, but in the most diplomatic way possible. But given that we've now have the U.S. economy on the verge of a depression, I felt maybe a little more, you know, plain speaking was appropriate. And it felt really good to be able to just say things the way they are, to not have to, you know, pussyfoot around. And that was great. And then, so it felt really good. And people were being friendly. They weren't being nasty. There was no nastiness at all. And then the goons found out about it, the grainy goons, and one of them came over and he put up two abusive posts. And even those, well, I didn't see the second one. I saw the first one. The first one was mild by goon standards. And these were obviously goon posters. You know, they had no blog. It was one post, first time they'd ever posted there. You know, it's like, who are these people? You know, it's obvious they were goon posters. And one of the owners of the place took the whole thread down. And it was amazing to me. And I wrote him. I said, why'd you do it? And he had no answer. So that was discouraging. But on the other, even that wasn't totally discouraging because the guy didn't ban me, which in the past he would have banned me. Pre-crash, I would have been banned for telling the truth about stock investing. No questions about it. And he, you know, he didn't really make up a reason. He almost didn't bother. It was just sort of like, you know, I took the thread down because there were two abusive posts and it would have taken a second, you know, to delete each one of them. And that would be 2 seconds. And I could delete the whole thread in 1 second, you know. I mean, it was ridiculous. He didn't even try to make a case. So, you know, you got sort of a funny feeling about that. What's going on here? The taboo is breaking. We're able to talk about this stuff a little bit. But it's still there. It's still got power. So that, I don't know how much time passed. I went ahead and wrote some blogs, guest blog entries. And then the goons would come on each one and attack. And it was getting, you know, I felt like a lot of the blog owners were being put to a lot of unnecessary frustration. And I felt I should do something about that. And so I went to this farm and pointed out the problem. And this one was called We Need Protection from Goon Posters. Now, this one was more harsh, the reaction. It was not as soft. It was not as warm as the earlier thread. People were upset. But it was hard to understand why. I went back and read the thread the other day, and, you know, there's just not one word in there in which I say anything in any way, shape, or form could be interpreted as hostile to the people at this forum. I did tell the story about the Grainy Goons. But what do they care about the Grainy Goons? And this is a point the goons make from time to time. When I used to post over at Vanguard Diehards, you know, Mel Lindauer was just savage, you know, attacking because I had pointed out the Grainy got the number wrong. And I'm like, the goons over at the Grainy board, they'd say, well, oh, Rob, you know, why does Mel care? And it's true. You know, they make some good points. I mean, some of their points are you know, Looney Tunes, but some of the points are not. And this point, I think, is legitimate. Why do these people care? Why does anybody in the world care whether Grainy got the number, you know, if he got the number wrong? If they think he got it right, they can, of course, say they think he got it right. Why would they care? Why would they get so upset that somebody pointed out that he got it wrong? What do they care? That goes way back to the beginning. That was even true at the fire board. People would come on and they'd say, I remember one guy, oh, he was so angry, and he was a smart guy, and he said, John Grainy does not post here, you know, gee damn it, you know. And I'm like, well, yeah, I know that, but does that mean we can't talk about hers in his study? It's a retire early board, and he had a study on early retirement, and he got the numbers wrong. Can we talk about that? Is that a problem? But there was a feeling that it was a problem. It was a taboo. You see, a taboo is something that... I was going to say, though, I want to finish, otherwise I'll lose the train of thought. But at that last thread was real delicate at the Money Bloggers Forum. And eventually, the same guy who took the thread down, the earlier thread, said, you know, he threatened to take this one down. And I basically thought then it was over. He's going to take the thread down if I say one more word. And I felt I had to say another word, because if I don't, you know, my goal all along has been to quote-unquote normalize safe withdrawal rate discussions. You know, make it a discussion like any other, where people can offer different points of view, and then people will figure it out. I'm not worried about it. You know, some are going to agree, some are going to disagree, so what? You know, it's just the way life is. But we have to normalize it so that people at least, you know, feel free to state their point of view. And if the guy threatens... and I don't say anything, it's not normalized. So I feel like, yeah, I'm going to get banned, but not a thing I can do about it. So I wrote the most polite response I could write saying, look, you know, I did nothing wrong here, but if people ask questions about this, I'm going to answer them. I'm not going to not answer. But I mean no offense. You know, I respect your blog. I respect, you know, you try to help people, but like to be your friend, but that's that. I'm going to tell the truth. And I shouldn't be asked otherwise. I mean, it's just crazy. And the thread stayed up. And then there was a follow-up where another leader at the board, not the same guy, said, oh, you sure are persistent. And I said something true. You see, my rule is I won't lie, but if I can be at all deferential, I try to be so. And I said, I don't mean to be persistent. I said, I'm sort of backed in a corner here. You know, people are asking questions and I have to answer them. I said, my preference would be if everybody would just drop it. And maybe that made them feel better, that it wasn't going to go on and on. So there have been no other responses since then. But it just, it's amazing. It's an amazing document to read because the people participating, there were a couple kind comments mixed in, but most of them were hostile. And the idea, you know, no one made any legitimate argument at all. No one made any effort to make a legitimate argument. It was all just shut up. You know, it was basically it, shut up. And then they'd say, oh, we don't, you know, you're allowed to express your views on investing. That's fine. But not on this other thing. You know, you're not allowed. And like, why not? If people are coming after our blogs, destroying them, well, why shouldn't we talk about it on a blog forum? What would you think we would talk about? Could there be any more important issue? But it's taboo. And I did a similar thing at SiteCell. My web host is SiteCell.com, and they have an extensive discussion board. And I put up a post there yesterday asking for help with the goon problem, and it got no response. Now, that's strange. I've never gotten no response before. That's one thing I can't complain about. So that was strange. And you know, I wouldn't call it a good sign. I wanted to get a response. I wanted to get community involvement. So I wouldn't call it a good sign. However, nobody attacked me. You know, nobody threatened to kill my wife and children. So maybe it's a good sign. It's what I see happening is that, see, you have to understand how powerful taboo is. If you break a taboo, you're not kidding around. I mean, that's serious stuff. It's cultural. It's deep. It's ingrained. And so a taboo doesn't fall easily. And so what I think is happening is because of the crash, people are entertaining the idea of letting the taboo fall. They're thinking about it. They're not willing to go there yet. It's still too scary. But they're not quite as willing to fight to keep it up. And so they're almost looking for a compromise. They're like, yeah, well, you can't say that, Rob. But if, you know, maybe you could say it and we'll ignore you. We won't kill you. We'll just ignore you. And that way we'll protect our community from your words. That's not great. I don't think it's the right thing. I think we need to break this taboo before the economy goes over a cliff. But it's a step in the right direction. Another example of the taboo quality of this is I've mentioned how there's an article every day. I provide a link every day at my site, the Today's Passion feature, to some article on investing. And lately, it's hard to get them all in. Now, because there's one every day questioning the efficient market theory. Almost, not every day, but almost at least three times a week. And, you know, I always want to put those up. Those are critical that people hear them. So, I've got a long list backlogged of these links. And those are breaking the taboo. If the efficient market theory does not hold up, everything you have heard from the quote-unquote investing experts over the past 30 years is wrong. The idea you can't time the market, that's wrong. The idea that stocks are always best for the long run, that's wrong. The idea that you should, you know, buy and hold is the way to go, that's wrong. All this stuff is wrong. If the efficient market theory is wrong. And people are saying it every day. You know, recognized, established publications. You know, New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, Financial Times. I mean, all over the place. They're breaking the taboo. They used to break it. They always would break it in rare occasions. You see, once a year something would come up. But this is like, and it's not the same publication every day, but somebody somewhere is breaking the taboo almost on a daily basis. Now, here's the killer, though. They break the taboo, but then there's no follow-up. You know, if you're going to say the efficient market theory it doesn't work, what would seem to me, there's got to be an editor who read the thing before it went into publication. Well, why doesn't the editor then assign a reporter to do an in-depth piece on why this changes all the rules of investing, which they're all stood in their head? Why doesn't he do that? He obviously read the same piece I read, and the guy is saying the foundation of all the investing advice of the past 30 years has been discredited. So why doesn't he assign somebody to write a long in-depth piece to go on the front page saying that we've got to change all the investing advice? We all got it wrong. It's the most natural thing in the world. I remember this is what happened with me with Scott Burns. Scott Burns, Dallas Morning News columnist. I don't think he writes the column anymore, but he still writes there sometimes. But Scott, you know, I wrote him because he has done a lot on safe withdrawal rates over the years. And I wrote him about our findings on the New School studies. And, you know, he agreed with me, told me he agreed with me. He said he wanted to call me and talk it over. And I'm like, this is great. I don't know how, this was years ago now. This was, God, Scott did his first column in, I think it was June of 2005, and I had been communicating with him for a long time before that. I mean, I don't know, it might have been a year. You know, I don't remember for sure. I think it might have been a year. So, you know, say it was summer of 2004 when I first started talking to him, so it's, you know, it's like 4 or 5 years now, long time ago. And when Scott told me he's going to call me and write an article, I was just thinking, I'm in seventh heaven. I'm like, this is so great. And I said, we're not going to get one article. We're going to get 10. Because if you write an article showing the safe withdrawal rate studies are wrong, well, you got a natural follow-up. How did this happen? How did we all get all our retirement planning wrong? And then you got another follow-up about how did they fight to keep this on the internet? You know, and because it had already, the campaign of terror had already been going on 2-3 years. So I'm like, you know, then you're right about that. And then how did we discover it was wrong? Well, you're right about, you have an article about how the internet allows us to learn things we can never learn before by combining information from, you know, ordinary people all over the world. So you got another follow-up. And then how about how did the experts miss this? You know, and it's another follow-up. It's just like bam, 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 bam. This will never stop. And then, you know, like a switch, Scott turned cold. You know, he's all hot to do this, and then he sort of backs away, and then ultimately, you know, I sent him some follow-up materials, and then ultimately he runs this article, which, you know, he tells the truth, but he distances himself. He never personally signed on. He says, well, you know, here's this there's this new school out there, this new theory, but he never said, I, Scott Burns, endorse it. So it was weird. But it's taboo. And of course, I had follow-up discussions with Scott, and he told me, he said, you've added a new layer of understanding to the retirement issue. However, your approach of pointing out that the old school studies are analytically invalid, that they are wrong, is quote-unquote catastrophically unproductive. That's another way of saying telling people that those studies get the numbers wrong is taboo. It's taboo. That's what it means, catastrophically unproductive. It means taboo. He's not saying anything's wrong with it. He's acknowledging that I got it right. And obviously, if people have been using studies that get the numbers wrong to plan their retirements, they need to know it. You know, nothing could be more obvious, but you can't say it because it's taboo. Now, what is it? You know, taboo is, it's a community rule. Something we have to start with here is taboos are not bad. You know, I'm a journalist, and journalists are sort of, you know, everybody has a job in society. We all have a different job. You know, a priest, it's not his job to break taboos. You know, a priest, it's sort of his job to not break taboos. You know, who else would not break taboos? Politicians, as a rule, I don't think, I guess sometimes they do, but usually they don't break taboos. You know, in other words, there are certain groups in society where their job is sort of to add to social cohesion. And taboos are, the purpose of a taboo is to hold the culture together, to hold the society together. In other words, the thing that is taboo is a threat. That's what it is. It's a threat. And the threat involves two elements. One, it somehow hurts the community, or is at least perceived to hurt it. And two, it's got to be of real power. In other words, it used to be a taboo to burn the American flag. That was a taboo. And then in the 60s, these Vietnam protesters, they would burn the American flag. And it was brought to the courts. There were all kinds of things. Is this permitted? And some people would say, well, what harms it do? Burning a piece of cloth. So what? Put people in jail, burning a piece of cloth? But of course, the purpose of burning the flag wasn't to burn a piece of cloth. The purpose was to insult the country, express disdain for one's country because of this war. And people took it that way. Many veterans took great offense at the burning of the flag. So it was a deliberate violation of a taboo. That's what was going on. I'm not saying right or wrong. I'm not taking a position. I'm just saying there was a taboo. No question about it. And it was broken. And as a society, we had to cope with it. Are we going to permit the taboo to be broken, or are we going to reassert the taboo? Or are we going to duck it? There's a third angle. When they had the don't ask, don't tell policy on gays in the military, that was ducking the taboo. The taboo was being challenged. And the political response was to duck it. Don't ask, don't tell is basically saying, look, this is taboo. You can't talk about this. A taboo is not a bad thing. A taboo is for social cohesion. There's a reason for a taboo. There's a reason for it. But a taboo can become a bad thing. See, that's... And as I was saying, I'm a journalist, and a journalist's role is to some extent to break taboos. I'm not one of these people that goes around trying to do controversy just for the sake of controversy. Some journalists see that as the job. Always break taboos. I think that's going too far. I'm more of an explainer. What I like to do is to take complicated subjects and explain them for the average person. That's how I see my role as a journalist. But I have enough journalism in my blood that I don't shy away from taboos. I don't go looking for them, but when the only way to explain something is to violate a taboo, I feel obligated to do it. I feel I have to explain this to the best of my ability, and if that means breaking a taboo, well, so be it. That's the way it is. Nothing I can do about it. So I won't walk away. And I do file it away for future reference that there was a taboo-like reaction, and that means there's something there. So a taboo is something that is perceived as a threat, and part of being perceived as a threat is that there's some truth to it. If somebody had accidentally burned the American flag. They just were stupid. They were lighting their barbecue. They were using barbecue fluid and it got on the flag on the 4th of July. People wouldn't be upset. They did the same act. Nobody really cares. They might say, hey, you should be more careful, buddy. But there wouldn't be any of this social ostracism. But the problem with the deliberate burning of the flag is, especially in connection with the Vietnam War, is people were ill at ease with the Vietnam War. Even a lot of veterans. Even a lot of patriotic people. They may have supported it, but they were not 100%. It wasn't like the Second World War, where there was, I think, broad support. So that just makes the protection of the taboo that more fervent. Because people are scared. This taboo may fall. There's a feeling that this taboo may fall. And if there's a feeling that the taboo may fall, people are really going to cling to it because what you're putting forward is a change in their way of life. You see, this is what taboo is all about. None of us know everything. Start with that. But we all have to live here. We're stuck. We're stuck here on planet Earth. And I guess if you're in hell, you don't need to know the answers because it's all settled. And if you're in heaven, you don't need to know the answers. It's all settled. But here on Earth, it's a complicated mess. And you got to get up in the morning and you got to get out of bed and you got to commit certain acts, you know? You got to earn some money to have something to eat and all this sort of thing. You got to raise your kids, you know? You got to tell them something. You know, maybe you don't know. You know, I think a lot of people have this question, what should I tell my kids about God? And they don't know themselves. But I got to tell them something. I mean, you could tell them I don't know, I suppose. But if you tell them I don't know, that's also telling them something. You know, it's saying they respect mommy and daddy. Mommy and daddy have been around 40 years or whatever it is. And mommy and daddy don't know. So it's okay if I don't know. You know, I mean, they may not become atheists, but they might become agnostics. They might say, well, mommy and daddy don't know, so nothing wrong with me not knowing either. That makes sense. I'm just saying, you know, however you play it, you know, you got to do something. So taboo, in so many issues, we have to do something. This is what happens as a society. Taboos are all about community. They're all about society. And we have to do something. We have to make a rule. We have to say, this is permitted, this isn't. And then we've got to defend that rule. And if the rule is deep enough, so that, you know, if it's some little rule, if it's, what's a little rule? You know, right turn on red, you know, they changed that one. I mean, that was a tiny little taboo. You know, I remember when they changed right turn on red. They said, you know, in the old days, you couldn't do that. You had to stop at a red light, period. And then they said, oh, let's allow right turn at red. And there were some people sort of upset, like, what? You're going to allow turns on red? No, the breakdown of society, the end, you know. But that one wasn't, you know, we took to that one pretty easy. Once they had right turn, everybody got used to it, and it, you know, I'm sure some people still don't think it's a good idea. But for the most part, people just took to it. It wasn't a big deal. But some changes are deep, and you change the rule, and you're changing how people live. So I was going to just go through some taboos, just to discuss the nature of taboo, and two, how they change. Because you see, taboos are not written in stone. They seem like they are. The whole idea of a taboo is this is a rule, and this is a rule that cannot be broken. That's almost what taboo means. You know, you can't play around with it. But the full reality is taboos do change. They change over time. And what I believe the taboo on passive investing is going to change. The taboo on criticism of passive investing is going to change. Passive investing has failed. Failed miserably. It's going to change. And I believe the taboo on pointing out the problems of abusive posting on the internet is going to change. I think both of them are going to change. I sure wish I hadn't taken on two at one time. That was strategically not a smart thing to do, because it's real hard to break a taboo. If you're really going up against a mountain, and to be going up against two at the same time, holy moly. But, you know, it wasn't me who connected them. It was John Graney, you know, John Graney. Something interesting here, before I go through my list of other taboos. If you go back, I have an article at the site at the Bandit Motley Fool section. It's called Community Comments on the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate Debate. It's snippets of community comments made in the early days of our discussions, almost 7 years ago now. And if you listen to some of those, or you read some of those, people weren't aware. When I first pointed out the errors in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies, people weren't aware that it was taboo to talk about it. And so you'll get some honest discussion on both sides, but, you know, without the taboo thing entering in. Very interesting. And then Graney is the one who made it taboo. Graney made it clear with his goon squad, this is not permitted. And then people got into the game playing. And that's where we are to this day. But the amazing thing is, you see, we don't just have a taboo at boards where Graney is. Because Graney, you know, he doesn't even post at some of these boards. Never has. I mean, he's never posted at the Money Bloggers Forum, I know. And nobody he knows ever has, as far as I know. I think the taboo they're worried about, personally, I think that what they're worried about is the taboo against power structures on the internet. In other words, the threat that they see, I don't even think they see the threat. I think some of them may be, they see a little bit of a threat on passive investing, probably, because it's so different. you know, to say that passive investing doesn't work. But I don't think they really care about that, most of the ones who were on that thread. I think what they care about is that I'm a newcomer. They don't know me. And I'm saying that all the big shots are wrong. I don't say it that way. I don't come on and say big shots are wrong. Never would I do something so ungracious. But they hear it that way. They're saying, this guy, you know, our leader, whoever he is, you know, has 50 articles in favor of passive investing. And you're saying passive investing is nonsense. So you're saying he's posting nonsense. And who are you, buddy? You know, there's a taboo there that I'm not allowed to challenge the established thinking. And I think that has to change. I think if the internet's going to be effective, if blogs are going to be effective, we have to be able to challenge the established thinking. And the test should be not, you know, am I a newcomer? The test should be, does what I say hold up? But I don't think they even care about the passive investing. I mean, they care, but not enough to explain what went on there. Or to take the whole thread down. It just it's hard. It's hard for me to believe. But of course, if they, you know, the thread has to be there if they're going to learn enough about the subject matter to write about it effectively. So, you know, there is no way to fix the passive investing problem without writing about it, and writing about it kicks in the problem with authority. And of course, the same thing's true with all these experts. You know, when you challenge them, they don't like it. But if you don't challenge them, they're never going to learn what they got wrong. So you have to challenge them. Now, I'll just go through. I just spent a couple minutes thinking through some taboos. The most obvious one is blacks sitting in the front of the bus. The Rosa Parks, I don't know what the year was. 1956 is the one that sticks in my head, but that could be wrong. I was born in 1956, but it was somewhere around then. Maybe it was a little later than that. I don't know. Maybe it was 62 or something. I don't know. Somewhere around then. But, you know, you might say, well, you know, what's the big deal? You know, why did anybody even care? She sits in the front of the bus or the back of the bus. Who the heck cares? What's the matter? But you see, it mattered because, and please understand, you know, when this was a taboo, it wasn't as if, I mean, I'm always uncomfortable when people say, you know, whites did this to blacks. It's like, I mean, they did in a way. The whites had the power. So that, to that extent, it's fair. But the blacks didn't break the taboo. In other words, Rosa Parks did. But blacks in general, they just sat in the back. They just felt go along to get along. You know, I'm not criticizing anybody. I'm just saying, that's the nature of taboo. It's the entire society has to support it. It's not, there were laws, I think, that said you can't do this. But the laws, it wasn't really the laws that enforced it. It was social. You know, if you did the wrong thing, if you sat in the front, it's like, you know, rudeness. I mean, rudeness is a weak term for it. You were socially ostracized. That's what it came to. Not only by whites, you were socially ostracized by blacks because you were a troublemaker, you know? Why cause trouble? You know, this is just the way it is. This is the way it is. You know, shut up. But in order to, so if you change that, if you sit in the front, well, you the whole world changes. It might seem like a small thing. Who cares, you know, where we sit in the bus? But we just get there either way, right? You sit in front, you sit in the back, you still get there. Well, it changes a lot of things. Because once you say, I'm going to sit in the front of the bus, there are other things that obviously follow from that. You know, if you're going to sit in the front of the bus, you're going to want the same education, you know, in public school. Just, you know, an obvious follow-up. And that changes the world. If you're going to sit in the front of the bus, you know, one of these days you're going to have a candidate running for president. You know? What? And everybody knows it. You know, people don't talk about it, but they all know it. They may not work through every single little implication, but everybody gets the idea. This is what taboo is all about. It's just pregnant with implications. If we allow that, what happens next? That's the thinking that goes into play when a taboo is violated. But that's obviously a taboo that was broken. The society had reached a stage where this idea that blacks can't sit in the front of the bus was no longer viable. Somebody was going to break it sooner or later. I think we're there with passive investing. It's been 28 years now since we've had research showing that valuations affect long-term returns. 28 years. Anyone with half a brain in his or her head could have figured out if valuations affect long-term returns, passive cannot work in the real world. Rob Bennett didn't figure this out because he has an IQ 140. I can sign a statement in blood on that one. That ain't what happened. Anyone could have done this. But it's been taboo. You couldn't talk about it. I think that taboo has to fall. It has to fall. I didn't want it to be me breaking it. I didn't want to have my head bashed against a wall. But I had no choice, is how I feel. Because I was in a community of people, and these people were my friends. And if I tell them the wrong numbers for their retirement, they're going to suffer a busted retirement. And I can't do it. It's just wrong. It's just wrong. It's such a deep level that to ask somebody to do that. A lot of the people in the community, of course, they believe in it. They believe in passive investing. So to them, it's not dishonest. But for me, it sure is. So they're in a, you know, the community is in sort of a jam. The community's saying, we don't want to hear what he has to say because we don't agree with it. On the other hand, how can we insist that he be dishonest? So we had these dramas that would play out over, you know, a year or 2 years at some boards. Vanguard Diehards, it went on for 2 years before they worked up the courage to ban honest posting because they said it's wrong to ban honest posting. But ultimately, they said to allow the taboo to be violated is just too much. But my belief to this day is that the taboo is going to fall. And I really think what the whole crash is about is it's taboos are developed by a society to protect social cohesion. But some outside force ultimately, what happens is you have a taboo and it's like a it's like a fortress. It can't be violated. It's just got layers and layers of protection. But if the taboo is out of date, it instead of helping social cohesion, it ends up destroying it, destroying the society. It's like a parasite. And at some point, some force has to break down the taboo or the whole society is going to explode. And I think that's what this crash is about. This crash is an attempt to make us realize how damaging this taboo is so that we will replace it or do away with it. But it's the taboo is putting up a good fight. I think the taboo is losing the fight. Slowly, though. Too slowly for my taste. But I do think it's losing the fight. One that stuns me is Edmund Muskie. Edmund Muskie, my recollection is he was Hubert Humphrey's running mate in 68. And Humphrey lost to Nixon, and then Muskie ran in 72 for the Democratic nomination, and he was the front runner. And, you know, the first place they go is New Hampshire. He went to New Hampshire, and somebody had written an editorial attacking his wife for I don't know for what. And he's having a press conference, and he cried. Yeah, you know, one tear. Just one tear guy came out of the guy's eye. You know, because he's emotional. And that was it for Edmund Muskie. I mean, it's amazing to me. This was 1972. Not all that long ago. You know, 82, 92, 37 years? You know, it wasn't manly. You know, he wasn't presidential material if he would cry in public. It was one tear! He didn't cry. He teared up, you know, would be the correct way of saying it. He claimed he didn't cry. He claimed, you know, it was snowing. And he claimed it was just a snowflake, you know, melted on his cheek. You know, he didn't really cry. I think the guy cried a tear. But, you know, so what? You know, so what? I mean, now all kinds of people cry a tear today. Remember, Hillary Clinton cried a tear when she was in the nomination fight with Obama, and somebody asked her, "Oh, you know, we appreciate what you do," and she said, "Oh, it's hard sometimes, you know," and she cried a tear. It's just a tear. Same thing as Muskie, just one tear, whatever. And then it was the opposite. It was like, oh, she's pretending. She's not really crying. She's trying to make herself look human, you know. I'm trying to give herself a human look. And nobody was saying she should be kicked out because she cried a tear. She's not presidential because she cried a tear. Nobody would think that today. I really don't think anybody would think that. But so many people thought it in 72 that the guy lost the nomination. Amazing. But, you know, again, you know, I don't believe in going back and saying, oh, people were stupid. You know, people are never stupid. People are pretty much the same, you know. People obviously, you know, society changes, but the IQ level, I don't think, changes. There's a reason why there was a taboo against crying. For good or for ill, there was a reason. And I think the idea was a leader has to be tough. You know, of course, we once had a rule that women couldn't run for office. That was part of the thinking. You know, again, for good or for ill, it was that softness, women were associated with softness, and that's for the home fires. You know, we need softness at home. You have to have somebody to hold the children when they skin their knee. But when it comes to negotiating with the Russians, you got to have, you know, a suit of armor, and you got to be a tough guy. And, you know, you're not going to cry because somebody criticizes your wife in an editorial. And if you do, you're off the stage. Now, as I say, we look at that today and we marvel. But, you know, maybe because of the war, maybe because, you know, people felt we had to be tough for the war, for the Depression, or, you know, whatever it was. But there was a thinking that you had to be tough. And so there was a taboo on crying if you're going to run for president in public. And he broke that taboo and he paid a price. The taboo is for social cohesion. The taboo is the way the society, in other words, we couldn't bear to see our president cry because it would scare us to death. And so we made a taboo saying, you can't cry, you can't tear up, you know, you just can't do that kind of thing. It's just out. And it's never written down. You know, nobody writes down a rule book that says no one running for the presidential nomination may tear up in a press conference, you know. But you're supposed to know it. And if you break it, well, too bad for you. You know, society comes first. You're out the door. And that's what's happened in the great safe withdrawal rate debate. That's the story. No one has ever shown that the old school studies get the numbers right. Never. Nobody even tries anymore. But the social rule is you can't say out loud that those studies are wrong because our society will break apart. If you acknowledge that those studies are wrong, what you're acknowledging is the 30 years of investing advice is wrong, which means all of these big shots got it wrong. You know, Money Magazine's been giving bad money advice for 36 years. We can't deal with that. But maybe we have to. See, I'm saying we have to deal with it. I am totally sympathetic to the problem. It's not that I'm saying, oh, I want to gun after these people. I'm saying, yeah, I understand the problem. But what I'm saying is we need to work on overcoming the taboo. In other words, we all need to work together to figure out what's the easiest transition from the passive model to the rational model, because we got to break the taboo, because otherwise our society is a money society. And if we're giving people bad numbers for planning their retirements, it all falls apart. It doesn't work. We're going to have a stock crash, which of course now we have. And we're going to have another one if we don't fix it. We're going to have another stock crash if we don't break this taboo. That's where it stands. There's going to be another 50% drop. Sometime within the next, I don't know, 3 years, 4 years, if we don't work up the courage to overcome this taboo on telling the truth about the effect of valuations on long-term returns. Well, Hillary broke a taboo during the nomination battle with Obama you know, they were beating her over the head because she wouldn't drop out. And I had a lot of sympathy for her because it was amazing how she didn't win that nomination. You know, I mean, everybody knows that. But you know, if she had done a little bit more strategic work, it would seem that she could have won, because she sort of conceded a lot of those caucuses. And she only needed, she was very close on delegates. And so she wasn't willing to drop out, and You know, she mentioned in one of these speeches, oh, they were saying, oh, you got to drop out, you got to drop out. There's this intense media pressure. You got to drop out, you got to drop out. And she said, look, she said, in 68, you know, Bobby Kennedy, he won California. That was making him the front runner. That didn't even happen till June. It's like April now. So we didn't even know the front runner. In other words, our point was, it's still early. There's no need to drop out in April. I don't know what month it was. There's no need to drop out in April. And it was like, this was interpreted as, she was saying, oh, Bobby Kennedy got shot, maybe Obama will get shot. She didn't say that. I don't think she meant that. And she instantly came out with an apology. You know, she didn't. I don't think she meant that. But the point was, it was a taboo subject. You couldn't talk about it. And she just walked into a taboo. And, of course, politicians will do this unintentionally because politicians are being put up on a stage and they have to talk all the time. And there are some subjects that are just so sensitive that if you say the wrong thing, it's curtains. It's one of the reasons, you know, politicians, they talk so much gibberish because, you know, sometimes you're better to talk gibberish than you know, take a chance on saying something that's going to cause a nuclear, you know, bomb to go off. I just saw a catalog. I got a catalog from thinking about going to Myrtle Beach for a vacation. I doubt we'll do it, but I was thinking about it. And I sent for a catalog, you know, where they list all the places. And they have, you know, one of the pictures in the catalog, you know, two gays holding hands, walking, you know. It's not really shocking today. It's surprising to see, but it's not totally uncommon today to see something like that. Obviously, you see it in movies and this sort of thing. But there was a day when that was totally taboo, and changed. And so again, you know, that's really how you change minds. You know, you don't change minds, as a rule, with argument. There's a lot of argument on the internet. You know, there's a lot of argument all over the place. And most of it has little effect. People who already agree with the argument like it, and people who don't read it. And minds, as a rule, are not changed. Sometimes they are, but, I mean, only at the borderlines. Most argument does not change minds. But things like that change minds. Because the majority of people don't think through issues, you know, just because they don't have time and they don't have interest in any particular subject. Most of us only have interest in a small number of subjects. So most of us are going with what is socially approved. That's just a shortcut way of learning about the world. I'm not criticizing it. You know, I do it. Everybody does it. But one of the reasons why so many people believe in passive investing today is just that it's socially acceptable. That's, you know, that's what works, according to the experts. It's wrong, but people don't know it's wrong. And, of course, people are never going to learn that it's wrong until we talk about it. That the way to get from where we are to where we need to be is through conversation. But, you see, as long as the taboo is in place, we'll never get there. That's why we have the taboo. See, the taboo is there for a good purpose. Society to protect, it glues society together. You know, we have to give some advice on investing. We don't know it all. And so socially, we adopt a taboo so that we can have sort of conventional advice and not have it questioned, so that people can have confidence in it. Because otherwise, people would be afraid to follow it. But the trouble is, what happens when we change from not knowing if it's... We didn't ever know that passive investing was right. But I think people thought it was right. Lots of people. The case was strong. And so there was a need for social cohesion. You didn't want it to be attacked. But now the case is, there's a mountain of evidence that it's wrong, and there's really nothing anymore that it's right. No logical argument. It's all just emotion. So what do you do today? You're going to keep this taboo in place so that the wrong idea is protected perpetually? I find that hard to believe. I think the taboo will fall. But it's a messy business. Knocking down the taboo is a messy business because you've got all these institutional interests that have lined up behind it. And they're all going to, you know, they all look like fools. So I think those of us trying to break it have to be careful not to make them look like fools to any greater extent that is absolutely necessary. But I, you know, at the same time, I think we need to be honest. We need to break the taboo. We need to, we can't pussyfoot around. You need to flat out challenge the taboo, I believe. There's no other way to bring it down. And a lot of people today, you know, one of the things that's allowed, you're allowed to talk about valuations at so-called bear boards. That's not taboo. People do that all the time. Why is that, you know, permitted? It's permitted because it doesn't affect social cohesion. The bears are considered outsiders. They're not in the social mainstream. So it doesn't matter what they think. It doesn't matter what they talk about. But bring it over to a mainstream board, you know, like bogleheads.org, and it's a nuclear bomb. Because now you're telling the truth about stock investing at a place where it matters. This is where the middle class people go to learn. And if you tell the truth there, well, it's going to spread to other places. The whole thing falls apart. And that's what I want to do. You know, I don't want to tell it at a bear board. They know. You know, I don't need to tell them. They know before I knew. I need to tell it to the average middle class investor. That's who I want to teach about, you know, investing, how investing works. And those are the people that need to learn in order to keep our economy from going off a cliff. So that's what matters. But that's where the taboo is strongest. Richie Allen had a taboo. This one always cracked me up. I might have mentioned this on an earlier podcast, but Richie Allen was a third baseman for the Philadelphia Phillies when I was growing up. Great home run hitter. And he came out one year and he says, I won $100,000, you know. And no one had ever, I don't know if anyone had ever been paid $100,000, or if they had, it was one or two, you know, a very small number. And people were just up in arms. It was just an outrage, and they never forgave him for it totally. And of course, today it's a joke, you know. I mean, I think the average salary is over $1 million. You know, but it was taboo. A baseball player doesn't get paid as much as a president. I think that's what the president was paid in those days. And a baseball player just doesn't get paid as much as a president. You know, humans have secrets. Humans don't know it all. That's why we have secrets. We can't work everything out. You know, this idea of free speech. I'm a big believer in free speech. But the truth is, there is no such thing as total free speech. There isn't. Whatever society we're going to have, we're going to have a way to hold it together. And any society you build is going to have its weak points. We've had different societies. We don't always believe the same thing. As I say, once upon a time, you know, blacks didn't go to the front of the bus. Once upon a time, baseball players didn't get $100,000 a year. So we have changed. And of course, the way we think about it is we're better today. But who's to say? You know, the people, I'm sure if you brought somebody in a time machine, they'd say it was better before. But whatever society you have, you're going to have blind spots. You're going to have things you can't look at because the society, all societies have contradictions in them. All social structures are rules. Social rules are aimed at keeping the society in place, which means there have to be rules. There have to be structure. And that means there are things that cannot be said. That's what censorship really means. You know, the things that cannot be said. Whether it's done, you know, people make this big deal. Oh, it's not censorship if the government didn't do it. Well, that's, you know, that to me is a petty sort of point. If it can't be said, it's censorship. You know, if there's no way to tell somebody a message that they need to hear, the message has been effectively censored. Whether the person who carried it out, you know, worked for the government or not, if you can't say it, it's a form of censorship. And today, you cannot say that the old-school safe withdrawal studies get the numbers wrong. Anywhere on the internet, I've tried. You know, a lot of places haven't imposed a ban on honest posting only because people haven't tried. But if I go over there, the goons will find out about it. And when the goons find out about it, they will attack. And when they attack, the site owner will not do anything about it, most likely. Sooner or later, they will. Sooner or later, the taboo will fall. And when the taboo falls, that's the end of passive investing. There is no more. Because if there were any logical arguments to support passive investing today, I don't mean years ago, I mean today, somebody would have brought them forward in the course of 7 years. There are none. There are none. And I've gone up against some of the smartest experts in the field. And none of them, you know, some of them made a little bit of an effort, but none of them really made a serious effort. They know. They don't know all the details, I don't believe. But they know that this is the Achilles heel of the passive model, this question of valuations. And they must know about the data, you know, the studies for 30 years. How could they not know what's in the literature? They know. But they know not to say it. They know that Rob Bennett is you know, what did Graney call me? A dumbass. He's a dumbass to think that you can tell the truth about stock investing on a public discussion board. You know, where did this guy come from? But I believe, you see, I saw the damage up close and personal. I saw what Graney's study did to that discussion board, the Motley Fool discussion board. He used it as a hammer. Now, not everybody uses it that way. You know, some people just sort of mention it. They don't use it as a hammer. But it's, in a way, the Graney approach was better, because by using it as a hammer, he gave us clarity. He showed us how damaging the passive investing model is. And that's what prompted me to act. I was really acting in defense of my community more than I was, you know, I didn't really care that much about the safe withdrawal rate issue. As it turned out, it became a huge issue, but I didn't know that at the time. And I was just trying to save my community from attack. And, you know, the thing that was being used to attack us was this study. And so I had to point out, in order to neutralize the study, I had to point out the errors in it. That's how it happened. But, of course, by going down that path, by opening that door, I ended up discovering, you know, just how big a problem it was. And, you know, this is it. Taboo is what this is all about. I remember Wanderer, and he's the guy, actually, who started all this. Wanderer was my friend, and he was the guy. He was the best poster at Motley Fool, and Graney was attacking him and drove him off the board. He was the most popular, most best-liked poster. And Graney couldn't stand him, because Graney couldn't stand anybody that was popular. And but Wanderer once had a you know, Wanderer was my big supporter for a long time, and then he felt that the goons were going to destroy the other board he had gone to, the fire board, and he said, we've got it, you know, if we have to turn on Rob, we have to turn on Rob, we have to do what we have to do here, you know. And so he became a goon himself. The very thing he had opposed in earlier times, he became a goon himself. And but at one point, you know, he was feeling sort of bad about it, and he said, he says, this isn't like the Amish. We're not shunning him. We're shunning him from this board. But he's got the rest of the internet, you know. It's not as bad as what the Amish do. The Amish shun people. It's just their way of enforcing a taboo. If you violate a community norm, you're removed. You know, people won't speak to you, so you're being shunned. And, you know, I was being shunned at the Money Blog Network last week. You know, I was making legitimate points, and people were talking nonsense in response, and angry nonsense, because they were shunning me. They're saying, we're not going to let you challenge what our leaders have told us. You know, Mr. Newcomer. But the shunning was internet-wide. You know, Wanderer was wrong. Because once those tactics are used to enforce a taboo, you can't allow the taboo thing to be said anywhere. You can't say, well, we're going to allow honest posting at, you know, the Western internet, but not at the Eastern internet. How's that going to work? How are you going to stop it from spreading? Today, the communications revolution allows things to spread all over the place. You can't stop it. So if it's permitted, the whole thing collapses. And so the whole question is it eventually going to be permitted in one place, or will the taboo remain in place forever? Well, it may have been. If the taboo was not going to cause an economic depression, you might argue that it would have remained in place forever. But frankly, a lot of people today are having doubts about the taboo, and you can see that in that thread at the Money Blog Network, and you can see it elsewhere. And in all likelihood, we're going to have another 50% crash, you know, in the not too terribly distant future. Who's going to care about these so-called experts then? Who's going to care after another 50% stock crash? What people are going to go back to caring about is knowing how stock investing works, knowing how to put together a retirement plan that succeeds, knowing how to achieve financial freedom early in life. That's what matters. The taboo is not what matters. The taboo was probably put in place for some sort of good social reason, but it has proven itself damaging to the entire community. This taboo is outdated. This taboo does not work. It needs to be taken down. The focus of this podcast was the taboo on honest posting, on safe withdrawal rates and other valuation related questions. But the taboo on challenging big shots on the internet also has to be taken down, in my opinion. But that's a separate question, so I won't go into that here. But I think there's going to come a day when the old school safe withdrawal rate studies will be corrected, not just ignored. Today, when they come up, even at Bogleheads, they all get ashamed of them. They just say, can we talk about something else? They don't want to talk about old school studies. Why? Because they've caused such human misery. I say we need to talk about them because when we cause human misery, it's a learning experience. It's obviously bad that we did that, but we can learn from it and not cause the same human misery in the future, and we will never learn unless we talk about the mistakes we've made, and we've made some doozies in the past 30 years, friends and neighbors. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.